The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, joined by the most credentialed man in World Cup history, Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. We got to explain this. This is really cool. I have a board here of the UWW credential board, and it has your face with every single access point, whether it's athlete, I'll just go through a few of these. Athlete, UWW technical delegate, president, media, video analyst, TV rights holder. Every single access point has your image along with the appropriate credential. Congratulations. That was on the every access point with your picture on it. I was shocked when I walked by this. I did a double take. I came back, took a picture, and now we have this preserved for all of time. And we're going to put this up at the Gable Museum to document your historic run for every single credential known to mankind.
How ridiculous is that?
It's so awesome. I mean, it's a picture of you from, do you even remember where this picture was taken?
It's my Des Moines Register mugshot, Okay. Probably one of my last years at the Register. And it was the mugshot that I submitted last year when I got credentialed for all the world championship events. So UWW, I still don't know who's responsible for that. Nobody would give me a straight answer down at Carver Hawkeye, but my guess is somebody associated with UWW, or as they call them overseas, UVV, is probably the culprit.
Not only does it have your picture, it actually says Andy Hamilton on every single credential. That's what makes it better.
OG staff.
Provider, volunteer, NF official, and things that I haven't even heard of. So, great piece of history.
For all the OGs, I'm one of them, right?
It's so cool. And we're really going to talk about the World Cup. That's the primary focus for this show because I had a blast. I don't know what your thoughts were. I know that in talking just a few minutes at the venue, I liked that we had to stay there the whole time. It was a little bit cold, but I kind of liked having that opportunity to just stay around Carver for 4 hours and you run into people and have conversations with people you don't get to see that often and didn't have to travel anywhere. Maybe some people complained about it. I kind of liked it. I don't know what you thought. I loved it.
You go back and watch the World Cup year after year after year. And I mean, it's just an awesome event every year. Yeah. I mean, there's so many good matchups that, you know, the dual format's so entertaining. I mean, God, was the Japan-Cuba third place duel the best third place duel in World Cup history? I don't know. I mean, it was so much fun.
It was.
You got Yuki Takahashi, the world champ at 57 kilos, and he celebrates a little bit, which is a little bit uncharacteristic for the Japanese. And he celebrates a little bit after his first match, getting the crowd into it. And then each guy after that was trying to one up him, and you know the crowd was getting into it. The duels coming down to the wire, where if Cuba would have won a shutout in the end, a decision by shutout in the end, they would have tied 5-5 in matches and tied I think 20-20 in classification points, and would have come down to technical points. But it was just such a competitive dual meet and so much great action throughout. And that was just a third place duel.
Yeah.
You know, there were so many moments throughout those 2 days that were just incredible. I mean, there was a 22-17 match in the Georgia-Mongolia duel on Sunday. I mean, then so much epic stuff going on Saturday, the Kyle Dake, and we're going to get a chance to visit with Kyle Dake later in the show. Man, the display that he put on Saturday, I mean, coming out 6 points in the first 9 seconds that he scored. And then the back-to-back 4-pointers against Takatani, the 2014 world silver medalist, where got into a chest wrap situation and launched him twice. That to me was like the moment, you know, the defining moment of the 2 days in Carver Hawkeye Arena.
It was. And you talked about the bronze medal match that stood out to me for sure, because
like you said, Japanese normally don't do that. And so they were going over to the camera lady that was there for Japan every time doing the everything the Americans did. They would do the chest bumps and flex and show their singlet. And they just showed raw emotion that I just have never seen before. It was incredible.
Yeah. And she was like waving them back to the center, like get back and get your hand raised. It was, yeah. There were so many great moments those 2 days in Carver. And, yeah, that was certainly one of the most entertaining, was just sitting back and watching that duel come down to the wire.
So one of the non-storylines, of course, was Turkey, Russia, Iran. They were not in attendance. A lot of people talking about it and how that would have affected the crowd. I think there was, 6,000 to 7,000 there for the final tally per session. What would that bump up to if they had Iran there?
I think eight or nine, maybe.
Okay. I
don't know. I mean, that's just a guess. It was a watered down field, no doubt. I mean, you take Turkey out of the equation, and you know, they backed out early on, and then Iran takes their place and they back out, you know, kind of a mid federation turmoil over there right now. And Russia gets out at the last minute. Fortunately, they were able to, the people associated with the tournament were able to get Mongolia and India in at the wire. You know, you think about what that tournament could have become if Iran is there, if Russia is there, if Georgia sends a full squad. Going back to my point, if it's a full field, Iran's not in it in the first place because they were ninth in Paris instead of in the top eight. But nonetheless, if you get the world's best, man, it's off the charts exciting. And it was pretty good regardless. I mean, I wrote in a recap piece that, the trophy wasn't any lighter that they got. The medals weren't any less shiny. I don't think the crowds were, there may have been more people in the stands if Russia's in it, but I don't think that I don't think anybody that was there that their enthusiasm was dampened by the fact that Russia wasn't. The crowd was into it big time.
And it certainly didn't dampen the athletes' enthusiasm. No. They were as enthusiastic as I've ever seen them. I mean, it seemed like David Taylor, Kyle Dake in particular, they absolutely relished it. They were looking for it. When they won, it almost looked like they had it in their head, I'm going to get excited, because they were absolutely fired up. And they gave some great performances, but David Taylor especially looked like he was absolutely in that moment loving it, that he had an opportunity in front of, 6,000, 7,000 people. And that was really fun to see him just embrace that moment.
Well, yeah. And Royce Alger and I talked about this afterward, and he made a joke that's not fit for being retold on a family podcast. But, think about it. Those fans of Carver Hawkeye Arena have been rooting against David Taylor for a long time. They get a chance to get behind him. And that was pretty cool to see. And Kyle Dake, with each match that he took each time he took the mat, the ovation before he took the mat got louder and louder. So
it's true. Yeah.
He became a fan favorite. There were a lot of people that became Kyle Dake fans last weekend.
He was the star. I think he really came out as the star of the World Cup, and a lot of people, like you say, became Kyle Dake fans because of that.
Yeah, look what he did. I mean, three tech falls, and then a win over Hazanov, Olympic bronze medalist in the championship duel. He got a tech superiority win over Takatani, 2014 world silver medalist. A tremendous, tremendous performance by Kyle Dake. Same with David Taylor, four techs. Snyder, four techs. Burroughs. He put on a show too.
Yeah, he did.
He put on a show too.
And we talk about just some of the fun and the final match with Azerbaijan. You were talking about Kyle Dake, just one of the moments where his opponent went over and picked up the cube because they had thrown it in there. And then he went over and said, no, I don't want to protest that call, and went over to the officials table and picked it up and said, no, I'm taking it back. And I think the crowd really got into that part. Just some of the side drama that went on that wasn't necessarily wrestling. I think people appreciated it because it's unique and new and different. And the one thing that I think we have to appreciate is something that didn't happen. You were there during the ball pull era, and for about a period of 5 years, all you saw was all the off-the-mat antics. You saw people getting mad, throwing stuff in. You would see coaches get up on the mat and point at people. I think we're as clean as we've ever been. It just seemed like there weren't as many protests. It seemed like the officials wanted to be fair. They weren't looking to hose one country over the other, even if it was an American. It just seemed like they were down the line. Seems like we're on the right track. Hey, you're not going to get all of it out, but it seemed like it was a pretty clean event.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that, as you were saying that I thought about the crowd and stuff, there's a United States duel going on Saturday, and there was a big throw on the opposite mat, and huge applause for it. So you could tell that people were into not just the American matches, but they were, they were paying attention to what was going on the opposite mat as well. And, there are some things that I would like to see them do a little bit differently if they have that back in Iowa City, which I think there's a strong possibility it will be. I think the UWW folks from my conversation with them and USA Wrestling people that they were really, really pleased with the event and how it was run and the turnout and, just the enthusiasm level of the fans in Iowa City. But that being said, I think it was a pretty well run event. I think the crowd was great. I think, give them a chance to do it all over again and make some changes to, the process and how these teams are getting here and fine tune that to where teams aren't pulling out at the last minute, make it, attach some punitive, measures to that.
Yeah.
Because we knew last August Russia was in this deal. Like, why did it take why is it that 2 weeks out they're trying to get their visas still? I mean, that's, inexplicable.
Yeah.
So figure out that process, get that ironed out to where teams aren't bailing out at the last minute and where the folks in Iowa City and USA Wrestling can really knock it out of the park as far as promotion goes and build these stars for an extended period of time. And I think you got an even bigger and better event next go around.
So you're saying we could have this in 2019 in the United States at Iowa City?
I don't think they've settled on a place yet for next year.
Okay.
I think they would like to have it back in Iowa City. So we'll see.
Because, hey, the precedent's been set early on. It was created in Toledo in 73, and I think it was there for years. So I don't think it necessarily has to go in different countries like the World Championship. So if it works in Iowa City, why not bring it here? And if you get great fan support, seems like it'd be ideal. I don't know what it was like in Iran when that happened. Do you know what the crowd was like? Did they get pretty good turnout?
They last year it was in a smaller venue, but the place was jam-packed. I can't remember what the... I want to say that the arena that they held it in held like 3,000 people, but they were cramming like, I was told that they were cramming like an extra 1,500 or 2,000 people into the venue. But they were into it big time, and they always are. And I don't know though. I mean, I wonder, just reading between the lines and what some of the things President Lalovich said in that statement that he put out Saturday, you wonder. After the issues with Iranians not wrestling Israelis, will they have a championship event in Iran until that stuff gets settled? If that stuff continues, I don't know. So it's unfortunate. We've talked about it on other podcasts,
yeah.
Nobody wants to see that, right?
No, I mean, it's... Of course,
it's everything that our sport is against, right?
Yeah,
I mean, the sport's supposed to be about inclusion and the spirit of competition and wrestling, bringing people together, not driving them apart.
Yeah.
So,
back to just thinking about what we had 5 or 6 years ago. Don't you remember the controversy when you did the ball pull and you had to select a leg and which one, and then the coaches would get into it and false starts, and then you get angry? And it seems like we've really gotten away from that. I mean, I'm not 100% behind the rules. I still think you need to have a official winner. I don't like the tie, and then you have criteria. I think that's confusing.
I've come around on criteria.
You like it?
Yeah.
Explain why.
I was totally against it. But now I feel like the 6 minutes of action are so good that I'm almost afraid that if you take criteria out of play, that you're t-
tinkering with something that's pretty good right now. And maybe you got guys standing around, you know, not wanting to make a mistake in the end.
Now, so you're saying if it's 4-4, they're not waiting around.
Yeah. I mean, now from the 92nd point on, if not sooner, you've got somebody that's trailing, that's chasing, that's trying to regain the lead at all times now.
Do you think fans get it? Is it fan friendly enough that people understand it?
I think they've done a better job. I think certainly putting the underline on the scoreboard is a huge positive step. I mean, that's a necessary step that you know, guys have to know when they're out there, who's winning and who's losing. Fans have to know too. You know, so that's positive. I remember one year, I think even, you know, Bo Nickel in a world championship match won a world title. And I don't think he even knew he won until the referee raised his hand. It was a match that was, tied on the scoreboard. And you go back and watch it, and he's firing off shot after shot after shot after shot. And I think his aggressiveness may have even fooled his opponent into thinking that he was winning. And so it was really confusing at the end. And you know, we've gotten away from that now. I think guys know who's winning and who's losing. Now, there are some instances where, you know, like a 17, like the match the other day that was 22-17. And I'm just using that one as an example, but, let's say it was 17-16 coming down to the end. You don't know. Does like the guy who's trailing, does he need a push out to tie, like, will push out, put him ahead? Will a, yeah, or does would, he need to take down? Yeah. You know, I mean, when the numbers start adding up like that, it's kind of hard to keep track.
Yeah. I just think for the lay fan to be able to see 4-4 again, just like the 1-1, 1-1, 1-1, when you had the periods and you win a match that way, it's confusing. I just think you need to have some way to clarify the winner. And if it's the criteria, just add a point. If it's 4-4 tied and you have the criteria, give them a point. So at least shows 5-4 in the score. I just think that's healthy for the sport. So there's no question about who wins, who loses.
Yeah. I think, you know, one thing that was in my head for a couple of years there was, what if you had criteria to determine a 1 minute overtime, right? So if it's tied, you go to 1 minute, and the guy that or girl who has the criteria edge does not have to score. It's the other one who has to score in the 1 minute. So, but that being said, I you know, going back to the whole point of this debate right here, it's put into place because they don't want to see 15, 20 minute matches at the Olympic Games and have the program run longer than it was supposed to, right? Or well past the television window, or, you know, things like that. They want to stay on a schedule, and the way to do that is a match that, you know, is going to stay to a, you know, a certain parameter, right? I mean, it's not going to get strung out where, you know, with blood times and reviews, and then you've got a 10, 12 minute, 15 minute match. All of a sudden you've got one mat that's tied up for a half hour. Like that's not going to happen with criteria. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I just, like I said, I've come around on it. I was against it at the beginning. I was all about overtime, and, you know, the more I watch freestyle wrestling, the more that, I really enjoy just what we're seeing right now. And I'm afraid that, you tinker with it too much, and you might go back to having a product where guys kind of stand around and hang out, and, you know, we don't get the high level entertainment that we're getting right now.
It could be. And the way you articulated it was good, because it makes me think about that. I still like the thought of settling it with some other criteria than just a step out or a push out. Step out is worth so much. 4 point, and you use the example of the 22-17 match. If that comes down to criteria, what was it? Is it, you know, if it's equal throws, was it the last one thrown? I mean, it's just, there's just a lot of things that go into it. So to say, hey, why did he win the match? Well, it's because he got the last throw and it was 4 points and it was the last one. It's just, it gets a little bit confusing, but I think overall, now on the team performance for the United States, they won 6-4 in the finals against Azerbaijan. You said going in, hey, this is a good team. Watch out. They are a good team. And they showed it in the finals against the United States. If the United States has that performance at the World Championships, they will not win the Worlds again in 2018. I just think that they lost enough close matches, and you can't make mistakes at the Worlds. It's such a system right now that if you make mistakes and you have to rely on someone else to get through. Bill Zadig brought it up. He said, we had 2 gold, 2 silver, 2 bronze. We had 6 out of 8 world medalists, and we still only won by a point. And so you saw that performance. It was pretty exciting and exhilarating, but that performance won't cut it at the 2018 World Championships. They have to do more.
They were 31-9 in matches, Kyle, and they lost 6 matches by a grand total of 3 points.
Yeah. That was in your article.
Yeah.
Yeah, I read that. Yeah.
That they could have really put a knot on everybody's head in this tournament. I mean, they could have gone 37-3. They could have gone 38-2. There weren't too many matches in there where they were completely, you know, there weren't really any matches where they were completely outclassed. The most lopsided match they lost was Stieber against Japan. He lost 10-4, and he got taken down 4 times in the first minute while he got knocked on the head there, where they collided, and he had that gigantic gash on his forehead that was bleeding through, like, I don't know how many layers of tape. I think, you know, he's certainly better than what he showed in that match. And then he showed it the next day, you know, beating Haji Aliyev, 3-time world champ.
He looked good there. That was,
yeah, exactly. There, you know, he won some big flurries in that match that were pivotal. But, I think you're right. I mean, I think they're going to have to wrestle better. Thomas Gilman's going to have to finish more single legs. He's going to have to find a way not to get not to give up points when he's in on the legs. I mean, because these guys aren't – Thomas Gilman isn't getting beat because he's getting taken down time and time again. He's getting beat because opponents are countering him. And it's what happened in the World Championships. It's what happened Saturday against Takahashi. It's what happened Sunday against Edirishvili. He's just, you know, he's ahead in both matches with 90 seconds to go or less and firing off shots and getting – scored off his attacks. So he's going to have to get that ironed out. I don't think we saw the best version of Jaden Cox.
No.
You know, on Sunday, lost twice. What's he lost twice in the last 2 years total, maybe, or 3 times maybe in the last 2 years?
Hasn't been much.
So,
yeah.
So, yeah, I think they're going to have to do better. He's going to have to wrestle better, and I think he will.
Yeah. I think he's better at 189. I think he looked a little heavy. You just saw, I mean, he looked bigger at 202, of course.
I know that was a tough weight cut for him in Paris. You know, he did not look good early in that tournament over there. And then the further you got him away from the scale, the better he was in that tournament. But, I think, that will be fascinating to see what happens here over the course of the next, not just a couple of years, but next couple of months. How long does the 2-day weigh-in, the day of weigh-in, how long does that stay in place? Because I know that, there are some foreign countries out there that are not real thrilled with the idea of stepping on the scale and wrestling a couple hours later.
That's going to be, it changes. It's a game changer. And I think a lot of people, when they think about competition and you look at things historically, the weight cutting rules certainly impact how the sport is executed. 1972, I think it was 5 days of competition and you had to weigh in every day, or 6 days, 5 weigh-ins, something like that, where every day of competition you had to weigh in. They've just tinkered with it over time. But hey, you couldn't be that big at 72 Olympics because you had to make scratch weight 5 days in a row. And if you had a 24-hour weigh-in, you could get really big really quick if it's a 24-hour weigh-in and you have a 1 day of competition. It changes the game. And going to 2-day weigh-ins, it's going to favor a guy, I think, like a David Taylor or Kyle Dake when they get to the World Championships. If they get to the World Championships, it's a long road to get there. But it does change a lot of how they execute the sport. And I think Logan Stieber's got to move up a weight class now that you have 2-day weigh-ins. I think going 134, it's going to be a really tough cut for him. So I think it's the right weight class for him going forward, going up a weight.
If things stay status quo, I think so. And then you start thinking down the road with the Olympic Games, though.
Yeah.
When you condense it down to 6 weights, and that's going to affect some decisions, I think.
Yeah.
You know, where the weigh-in falls on the calendar, whether it's night before, whether it's, you know, day of, that will be something to watch. It's going to be really fascinating to see who goes where in 2020.
We're going to patch in Kyle Dake, four-time NCAA wrestling champion for Cornell University at four different weight class. He was also the star of the World Cup, which just took place in Iowa City, Iowa. Welcome to the program, Kyle.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, great to have you on. Hey, you really won people over. Could you tell the momentum was shifting in your favor, that you were really getting the fans on your side when you were going from match to match and you were going from throw to throw and people really enjoyed seeing you compete? Could you tell the momentum was shifting in your favor?
Yeah, I mean, after that first one, the crowd was pretty wild. They liked to seem like they liked the big moves, the quick finish, and you know, in match two, as I called my name, and my cheers were a little bit louder, but it was definitely the loudest after my match with Japan that evening, and it definitely was it was a pretty awesome moment to be able to wrestle in front of that big of a crowd and have everyone on my side.
Were you aware before the matches took place that when you won that you were really going to get into the matches? Because it seemed like you and David Taylor in particular really embraced the crowd. Was that something you were conscious about before you won the match?
No, not really. It kind of just happened. David and I were joking. We said, oh, it's great to have Iowa fans finally cheering for us. It was just kind of a little bit of a running joke. And, you know, we just try to put on performances and wrestle the best of our abilities and put points up on the board. And I think we did that.
Do you like your new weight class?
Yeah. You know, I love the weight class. I don't have to cut that much weight. You know, I'm training at the weight that I'm competing at. So there's nothing new. You know, there's not going to be any big changes. I'm not going to have to lose a bunch of water weight to get down to where I want to be. And, you know, I don't have to, you know, I monitor my diet very, very closely, but I don't have to manage my portion sizes as closely as I would have in the past. And, you know, I'm really comfortable at this weight class for sure.
Do you want to gain weight as you continue on with the next couple years? Of course, you'll have to make a decision in 2020 and what you're going to do there. But do you want to get bigger, or do you want to just stay right where you are?
You know, as I continue to wrestle at this weight class, I don't feel small. I feel actually pretty big for the weight. I'm used to wrestling guys who are much bigger than me, just because that's who I have for practice partners. So I'm used to this, the bigger guys who are really strong and that type of thing. So when I go out and I wrestle a guy who's my size, he feels, you know, not quite as big and not quite as strong. So, you know, I don't think I need to gain any size. And really, I'm taking it year by year. You know, my only focus right now is wrestling a great tournament in Las Vegas and wrestling to the best of my ability out there. And then the same thing at Final X and, you know, probably hopefully the best tournament I ever wrestle at the World Championships. So that's what I have my sights focused on right now. And that's all I'm really thinking about.
Two of your biggest rivals are on either side of you. Jordan Burroughs at 163 pounds. And then at 189, you have David Taylor. Is it fun being teammates with those guys now?
You know, those guys are great competitors, and being able to watch those guys not just compete, but also train. We were there for camp for 12 days before we wrestled. So being able to watch those guys train and how much they push themselves, you know, we each try to outdo each other a little bit when we're at training camp. You know, we see one person running a little harder at the end of practice, or, you know, in their stance of motion, they're hitting a few more shots than you typically would. You kind of turn it up to try to keep up. And I think they feel the same way, which is a great environment to be a part of and to train in, just because you understand that the level that they're at and the level that you're at is, you know, David and I are both trying to get to where Jordan has been. So, And Kyle Snyder, for that matter, Jaden Cox, all of those guys, you know, we had six world medals on that team, seven world medals on that team. So you know, those guys obviously know how to win at a high level. And, you know, that's what I'm striving for too.
Is it okay to be friends with your competitors, or do you need to keep that competitive edge throughout your career?
You know, when we're on the mat, we're competitors. When we're off the mat, we're talking and having great conversation and trading dietary secrets, training secrets, things like that. You know, they're not really secrets from anybody other than trying to keep it away from all those foreigners. So that's what we're focused on.
Kyle, when you talk secrets, what's the secret to that chest lock position that you hit against Hakatani? What were keys that made that work for you?
Yeah, I don't want to get too many. You know, those Russians are listening. No, but you know, I was in pretty good position when he shot. He didn't take a great shot initially, so I was able to capitalize on a little bit of his mistake. And you know, that's a position that I've spent a lot of time in, and I have a really good feel in there, both offensively and defensively. So, you know, from a defensive standpoint, I know what gets me in trouble, and I kind of just folded him up a little bit. And I don't know that I caught him by surprise. Maybe I did a little bit, but yeah, that was just good timing and good execution of a pretty simple technique.
Do you feel like you get a psychological edge when you go out to shake hands and you have glasses on? Do you think, hey, these guys are thinking I'm just an intellectual guy that they can run me over? Is that psychology?
No. No, I always wear my glasses. Got to be able to see the crowd. And, you know, I'm always wearing them. So I figure why not when I'm out there too? If I could wear them while I was competing, I would.
Was it a storyline amongst the athletes that Russia, Iran, Turkey weren't there? Did you guys talk about their non-participation as being a storyline?
No, not really. I mean, we were focused on wrestling whoever stepped on the mat against us. We know Iran is a really good wrestling country. So when they were in our pool, we knew that we were going to have to turn it up and be ready to rock and roll against whoever we had. And we had been preparing for that for a long time. And we, Coach Zadek made it clear to us that we don't want to ride the roller coaster of, you know, are they coming? Are they not coming? Why aren't they coming? What's the reason? And, you know, one of the biggest reasons in my opinion was probably because, you know, they knew how good of a team we had. And, you know, you don't want to go somewhere and not perform at your best. And maybe they were a little banged up or whatever, but, you know, Team USA is returning world champ. So, we have a bunch of studs and a bunch of firepower to get the job done. And, you know, obviously there's some political things that are happening that, you know, I don't really talk about, focus on at all. You know, I'm just out here to wrestle, and that's what I'm kind of doing.
In your final match against Azerbaijan, there was a moment where you got a turn, but the coaches protested. They threw in the brick, and then the athlete actually goes over and picks up the brick and takes it back. You're on the mat watching all that take place. What were you thinking about?
Actually, I thought I was pretty pumped that they were going to challenge, because I knew that it was my score. I didn't expose my back, and I was just excited to get another point, because I knew they'd lose the challenge and lose their brick for the rest of the match. So I went over to my corner and basically just asked Coach Cohen, Coach Zadek, like, hey, you know, what do you think? And they're like, no, you were good. I thought Hasanov wanted the brick originally, and they threw it out. And then I thought once he threw it out, it was final, but he went over and took it back. So I guess I don't understand the challenge rules that well.
You got a guy leaving the Cornell program. Damian Hahn is going to South Dakota State. How much are you going to miss him?
That's a huge hit to our program. Damian's been there for 12 years. He's been, you know, the cornerstone to our heavyweight success. He's really put a ton of time into the guys and into the program. And, you know, he's going to be really missed by everyone here. he's a great influence on all the guys, and you know, he's he demands success, and not just in wrestling, but in all aspects of life. So, you know, we're sad to see him go, but also happy at the same time that he has this opportunity to, you know, build on something that's already a really good product. But I think he's going to take it to the next level because he's an amazing coach and an amazing human being.
Kyle, you've had a unique opportunity, you know, as Kyle Klingman mentioned at the top of this segment, you know, four-time NCAA champion, four different weights. You wrestle a ton of different guys in college and also internationally with moving through weight classes. If you could have your choice of one guy you have not wrestled yet that you would like to some way, somehow, who would that be?
Probably Yazdani Chirati. I never got a chance to wrestle him. But, you know, I think I would really enjoy the competition of it and be able to, you know, get a good sense of his feel and how he likes to wrestle. And, you know, I've seen him wrestle a lot, and, you know, he's very overwhelming for a lot of these guys. And, you know, even if it's in the practice room, I'd love to have an opportunity just to wrestle around with him.
Do you prepare differently for domestic competition than international competition?
No, I think most of the time I'm preparing to win a world championship, and my training is geared towards that. Obviously, there are times when you want to peak, and Vegas is really where I'm trying to peak. You know, I kind of viewed the World Cup as EIWAs or a conference tournament, and the U.S. Open kind of as NCAAs, just to get my mind right and get my body feeling the way it needs to feel to wrestle my best there, because, you know, winning that tournament means, you know, a few fewer matches leading to the world team. So I need to be at my best there, and I'm definitely going to bring it.
Being in Iowa City that long, I'm sure you had a lot of fans wanting to interact with you or recognizing you. Could you tell the difference in culture between Cornell University and the University of Iowa?
You know, a little bit, yeah, for sure. You know, they really pumped it up that we were going to be there for World Cup. They did a really good job marketing it and getting the whole city involved with being accommodating to us. And you know, they put our names out there. They talked about, you know, they had us in the newspapers and all sorts of things. They talked about the Russia. They followed the whole storyline, which was really cool. You know, we've never really had anything like that in Ithaca. You know, I like to think that, you know, my home city could do the same thing. Obviously wrestling is not quite as big here. But you know, when we have those big duels that they turn out, and, you know, we've been trying to get the Iowa Hawkeyes into Ithaca for a long, long time. And hopefully Coach Tom Brands and Terry Brands decide that, it would be a good thing to start and, you know, add to their schedule.
I know it's interesting when we talk about all the senior level talent, but you had a lot of junior and cadet level talent that was there training with you guys. Are you amazed as we are how good these guys are early on in their career?
Yeah. You know, the likes of Spencer Lee, Yanni Diakmahalis, you know, the Tag brothers, Aaron Brooks. I don't even know what, the big boy, his name, we called him Greg Daniel. I know he has a last name, but I don't think I ever had heard it.
Kirk Fliett. Daniel Kirk Fliett.
Yeah, there we go. There it is. But those guys are superstars, you know, already. And they've been exposed to so much at such a young age that, and they've experienced, you know, that those match settings so many times that, you know, for them, it's like, man, I can't wait to get out there. You know, and a lot of them are immature, so when they wrestle with older guys, it's a little tougher, but that's exactly what they need so that when they are mature and they have that man strength, they're going to be able to overwhelm, you know, so many guys. And that, you know, that doesn't even mention all of the other juniors that were world champs last year and medalists last year. So, you know, Team USA has a very bright future, and, you know, hopefully we can continue this run as world champions and really cement ourselves as the best wrestling country in the world.
Kyle, you look back on the world team trials a year ago. How often have you thought about that last position where you were so close to an exposure that would have put you on a world team?
You know, that's just that's one of the things that, you know, you fail sometimes and you learn. And that's what I was doing, I guess, at the time. You know, I obviously wanted to make the team and win that match in the worst way. And it simply came down to me making one mental error, you know, a little bit of match awareness. I thought I had about 2 seconds to score that crotch lift after I locked my hands. Turns out I had about 6 seconds. And, you know, if I get a glance at the clock or, you know, I have a better idea of how much time is left, I don't rush things and try to pull them over my back. I continue the way I know how to continue and take them over his head. So, you know, that's just a really hard lesson to learn, especially with a spot on the world team on the line. You know, I thought last year I could have went out and won a world gold medal. But that's just the way it is. And, you know, I'm not going to look back and be upset about it because there's nothing I can do about it now. I can only look forward and look at the present moment, really, and hopefully I can learn from my mistakes.
From your vantage point as a competitor of his, how has Burroughs evolved since the first time you've wrestled him?
You know, he's always adding to his game, just like we all are. And he's an excellent competitor. He gets up for every single match, and he's ready to rock and roll every time he steps on the mat. So, you know, I have to do the same anytime I compete against him. This year, we obviously aren't going to be competing, and hopefully we'll be teammates come August. But, you know, he's a great competitor, and he really, really enjoys the sport and learning new things. Every year he seems to add something to his arsenal, which is, you know, admirable from a fan's perspective.
How cool is that he posted a picture of you on Twitter and called you a goat?
I don't know. Pretty cool, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, goat of what? I have the best chin hair? No, I'm just kidding. No, it's pretty cool to get that recognition, that for him to say those types of things and you know, recognize the hard work that I put in. And obviously, I've seen the hard work he's put in. So, you know, there's a mutual respect there for sure.
Going back to the cadet level athletes and just how much they progressed over the years, do you feel like they have more opportunities and are further ahead than you were at that stage?
You know, I never had an opportunity to wrestle at the Cadet World Championships because it wasn't really a thing when I was there. University World Championships was, you know, somewhat of a thing, but nothing crazy. And we didn't put much stock or value into the Junior World Championships when I was in high school. Everything was about Fargo. You know, I think that's a testament to the coaching staff and the developmental coaching staff putting more emphasis on it and college coaches putting more emphasis on it, because now we have, you know, guys who are making world teams and going on to become national champions. And so, you know, it's pretty cool to see those guys have those opportunities, wrestle in big time matchups and wrestle the best guys in the world.
In the past, you've talked about your philosophy that you got from your mom and that whatever happens is the best thing that could possibly happen. How does someone adopt that philosophy? How do they get that in their brain that even though you have a loss, you can overcome that, and that's the best possible thing that could happen in your life?
You know, it's a perspective and a choice. You know, you make all sorts of choices. What color socks am I going to wear? You know, am I going to comb my hair this way or that way? Or, you know, am I going to choose to be early to practice, or am I going to choose to be late? Am I going to choose to eat a healthy breakfast, or am I going to eat a candy bar? You know, these are all choices that you make. And, you know, I always say it's, you got to run every decision in your life through a priority filter. And, you know, you take these things and any decision and say, okay, well, is this going to help me improve and become better, or is this going to do nothing or make me worse? And, you know, a lot of times people don't look at it that way, and they just kind of go on and do their own thing and don't really value each and every decision that they make. So I think that's an important thing to understand as a young wrestler is, okay, anything I do is going to be there to help me improve. And, you know, obviously if I make a decision, I decide to eat a candy bar, or if I decide to do something, I'm going to live with that decision, and I'm going to be really happy that I made it. So, you know, a lot of times there's societal pressure with, coaches and parents and things like that. I think a lot of times these kids just need to understand that they have a lot of power in their decision-making, and making the right decisions, becomes pretty easy if you run it through your priority filter and you understand exactly what you want out of life. And even if you don't, you know, there's a few principles that you can find and, follow to make those decisions a little bit easier.
All right, Kyle, we like to play games on this show, and we have a game that we like to play. It's called True or False. We're going to give you five statements. You have to tell us true or false on this statement. You can elaborate on your choice of true or false. In fact, we encourage it. Kyle Dake, are you ready to play a game of true or false?
Sure.
All right. Question, or actually statement number one, Rob Cole has a sarcastic sense of humor. True or false?
True. Probably the most sarcastic I've ever heard.
Okay. Number two, Kyle Dake could beat his father, Doug Dake, in wrestling by the time he graduated high school.
False. I learned it until I won my first national title and he had, you know, two crippling knee injuries that I could finally take him out.
So after you won an NCAA championship, that's finally when you could take him?
That was probably finally when I could take him. Okay. Even then, it would have been a real struggle.
Three, winning four NCAA wrestling championships at four different weights is the most impressive record in college wrestling.
Ooh, you got to define impressive.
I mean, you define it however you want. I'm saying the greatest record ever.
You got to define impressive.
I'm saying it's the most impressive.
Impressive in the sense that it can't. Impressive in that it will never be accomplished again.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay, so you're saying true.
I don't think that feat will ever be accomplished again. You know, at the same time, being undefeated is one of the one of those feats as well. But you know, they're probably a one and a 1A.
Number four, Foxcatcher is a good movie. True or false?
True. I really enjoyed it.
What'd you like about it?
I thought the cast was great. I love seeing a couple of my buddies on the big screen, and you know, I think it was a step in the right direction towards getting wrestling in the popular media. Since then, we've had a few more wrestling stories come out on big motion pictures and things like that. So hopefully, we can keep the ball rolling.
All right, final statement. This goes back to you talking about your freshman NCAA championship in 2010 when you wrestled Montel Marion from Iowa. True or false, you are happy that Montel Marion chose bottom to start the second period instead of choosing neutral?
True. I thought I was the best wrestler on top in the country every single year I stepped on the mat. So anytime someone decided to go under me, I was pretty thrilled about that.
All right, you are out of our game of true or false. Thanks for taking this time. Congratulations on a great World Cup performance. We love having you on, and we'll look forward to seeing you in competitions in the near future. Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a good one.
All right, that was Kyle Dake, four-time NCAA wrestling champion for Cornell University. As we talked about with Kyle, he said it's the most unbreakable feat in college wrestling. We had a lot of fun. For Andy Hamilton, I'm Kyle Klingman. You've been listening to On the Mat.
This show is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.